enough time and I'll be waiting. Keep me in mind. Somewhere down the road you might get lonely. Keep me in mind. And I pray someday that you will love me only. Think about you someday.
CQM, Park Falls, a Civic Media station. This is 98Q Country.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. As the war in Ukraine approaches 2 years, the Ukrainian military's withdrawn from the eastern city of Avdiivka. The war a major topic at the Munich Security Conference, where NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the U.S. Congress must send more aid.
And therefore, I strongly believe that it's a good deal for the United States to support Ukraine. It's not charity. It's investment in their own security.
Allies of Russian dissident Alexei Navalny say his mother has been notified of his death Friday in a Russian penal colony. They say he was murdered. Russia's prison service reported he fell ill after a walk and lost consciousness. Former President Donald Trump ordered to pay $355 million in penalties after a New York civil suit that found he lied about his wealth in order to get favorable lending rates. He has vowed to appeal, and one firefighter was killed in a home explosion in the Washington, D.C. suburb of Sterling, Virginia. This is ABC News. Prince Harry speaking publicly about his father's cancer diagnosis.
Prince Harry speaking for the first time about the moment he learned his father, King Charles, had been diagnosed with cancer.
I jumped on a plane and went to go and see him as soon as I could.
How was that visit for you emotionally?
I love my family. The fact that I was able to get on a plane and go and see him and spend any time with him, I'm grateful for that.
Harry didn't meet with his brother, Prince William, but tells me he hopes his father's illness could have a unifying effect on the royal family.
Any illness, any sickness brings families together.
That's ABC's Will Reeve. An autopsy report says a 5-year-old Venezuelan boy who died in December inside of a migrant shelter in Chicago died of sepsis and a bacterial infection. Medical examiners also said a contributing factor in the boy's death December 17th was COVID-19. This revived concerns about conditions at shelters and how Chicago was responding to the influx of migrants. Brian Clark, ABC News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Local clerks say they're confident they could run safe and transparent elections this year, but they say they could use more money to make them run better. Mike Moan reports.
The city of Madison has been recognized by policy experts for holding safe and secure elections during the pandemic. But city clerk Maribeth Witzel-Beal says budget constraints can make it a difficult balancing act. She says there's greater interest in absentee ballots, requiring more manpower and building space to process them. However, there's a key problem.
The funding that we receive from the state and from the federal government hasn't increased to accommodate any of that.
She says that puts more pressure on property taxes. Meanwhile, a bipartisan coalition of state and local election officials estimates that offices around the country need at least $53 billion over a decade to repair and modernize election infrastructure. There are specific requests in the current federal budget debate, but the House and Senate are at odds over how much to provide. Sunwoo Oh with the progressive nonprofit group Stand Up America says policymakers need to understand how pressing this matter is.
We've been working to try to get more consistent and predictable funding from Congress to help support local administrators to get the resources they need and help modernize the election infrastructure that's super outdated in most of the jurisdictions.
In a national poll, 7 in 10 Americans said they believe the federal government should be just as responsible, if not more so, for election funding than local municipalities and states. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Here's another community reminder from Civic Media.
The Lord's Cupboard Food Pantry is open every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at First Congregational Church in downtown Park Falls. Check out their Facebook page for updates and income guidelines. Want to volunteer? Stop down Saturday to inquire. That's every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at First Congregational Church in downtown Park Falls. The Lord's Cupboard, serving those in need in Price County and surrounding areas for over 15 years.
Leaning into local radio, 98Q Country.
A new film about Giannis. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. On Monday, a new highly anticipated documentary about the Bucks' Giannis Antetokounmpo will be released.
People might say I'm one of the best players in the NBA right now, but I don't see it. I don't feel it because I'm scared of losing all this.
It's the story of how Charles and Veronica Antetokounmpo fled Nigeria to Greece to raise their four boys and the struggles they faced. Giannis' mother, Veronica.
We left Nigeria looking for a better life in Greece.
The dream of every father is to give your children a better education.
As an immigrant, you are nothing.
We've always been outsiders. We had to live in fear.
It's called Giannis, A Marvelous Journey. The film reveals how Giannis reacted to the news in 2017.
54-year-old Charles Antetokounmpo suffered a heart attack.
I said, I don't want to play no more.
Giannis, A Marvelous Journey debuts this week on Amazon Prime. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitouish Waters.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, look for a few flurries, otherwise mostly cloudy skies and quite breezy. Gusts up to 25 out of the west. For tonight, breezy with a low near 18 with mostly cloudy skies. Cloudy skies give way to some sunshine on your Saturday afternoon with a high near 31. Currently 2 below zero.
Will. Broadcasting from the Alclair Outdoor Studios. Presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
We're not just a radio show anymore.
This is Sporting Journal Radio.
That's right. Welcome to the show. My name is Brett Amundson. Thank you for watching this on YouTube, or maybe you're listening to this on the radio network, or subscribing wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Thank you. Thank you very much. Dan Amundson's over there. What's up, Dan?
Hey.
David Eckhart's over there. What's up, David?
Hello, hello.
What are you guys doing?
You, David.
Not much.
You, what is that? Does that say you, David?
You.
Ew, David.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good one.
Sounds like it. You laughed really hard.
All right, we got a lot to get to. In fact, we're gonna bring back the barotrauma.
We're so desperate for it. We just couldn't resist. We took 1 week off. We twitched a little bit. So.
That's right. So it's an important topic, and regardless of who you're getting your barotrauma information from, some people are out there with certain thoughts and perceptions of it, and we're just trying to go straight to the biologists, the people that have been studying this stuff for a long, long time. So obviously we filmed the DNR research, and then Scott McIntune suggested another name, and we're going to have Stephen Cook on the show this week. He's been involved in fishery research and fish biology for a number of years. He's actually at, I got to look this up again here, because he's at Carleton University in Ottawa. This is what the description is. Our lab uses ecological, physiological, and behavioral tools and concepts to address questions related to how aquatic animals interact with each other and their environment. We are particularly interested in how human activities influence aquatic animals with a focus on solutions. Nearly all of our work is focused on wild animals in the field, so we rely on the conservation physiology toolbox to characterize stress. We attempt to scale from individuals to populations. So they're really interested in fishing and how humans fish and how our fishing methods affect fish. And barotrauma would be a big part of that. So
follow the science.
That's right. We're going to have more with Stephen coming up a little bit later. So it's someone completely outside the discussion that we've all been a part of and have been weighing in on here for the last, whatever, couple of months or whatever it's been. It's been an interesting discussion about barotrauma. Have you learned anything, Dan?
Oh, absolutely, I have. It's been interesting. What we saw a couple weeks ago was pretty interesting. I've had some discussions with people about that. And unfortunately, I feel like there's a lot of bias out there just based on how this has all gone down. And it's really unfortunate because, like, everybody in this, I don't even want to call it an argument because I don't think it's an argument.
Right.
Everyone just wants the best thing. And unfortunately, there seems to be some form of divide, especially when you introduce a government agency. People For sure. automatically throw their guards up. And I get that. But it's been interesting to get a firsthand look at a lot of this stuff and see that some concerns people might have had and might not be as big of a concern. And I'm not going to dig into it too much. There's still data to be compiled and there's more studies to be done. So we don't have hard facts and information for you yet.
And I know somebody commented too on when we were out filming with the DNR about the crappie barotrauma, and we were fishing deep and it was a little deeper than we were expecting it to be that day. But if you're doing research like that, you know, if people are going to find crappies that deep, people are going to fish for them that deep. So why not do some research on those fish? And the comment, I think it came from Clayton Schick, like, well, you guys are just killing crappies in the name of science. And it's like, well, that's how, first of all, how a lot of research works. But we were all out there fishing and we were keeping all the fish that were in pens. Anyway, we killed some. Actually, the ones that died that didn't get eaten were ones that were done like Aaron Weeb's study. All the ones that were in the control pens were collected and taken home.
Yep.
Like we
ate them.
Everybody took home fish to eat, so none of those fish were wasted.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting data from a wide variety of depths. You know, it's people fishing that deep isn't, that's not a common thing across every lake in every region, but it happens. It's a thing in the Great Lakes. It's a thing. Remember when the bass elites went to the Missouri River? It seems like every time they go out there, there's people catching smallmouth, suspended smallmouth out of 70 feet of water. And I specifically remember the one picture. I think it was Lee Livesey caught a walleye. It was like a 13-pound walleye out of 70 foot or, you know, 40 feet down, whatever it was. It was suspended. Just this tank walleye that was just dead. Eyes bulging out. And so, yeah, there's people fishing deep. So what's wrong with getting that data? And,
yeah.
You know, I talked to somebody about it the other day, too, that they're like, well, once he's added another depth, it, like, completely skews the argument. It's like, well, this one study that was done the last couple weeks ago was not meant to prove anybody wrong in any argument. It's just to add on to the data that we have and trying to just figure some things out. What's happening at 60 feet? What's happening at 40 feet? What's happening at 30 feet? You know, you can't just go out and do everything in 40 feet. You're figure out what happens at 40 foot at that point, but they're trying to figure out what's happening at each depth range. So there's really nothing wrong with that. And there was a lot of fish caught out of like mid 40s. Honestly, I think most fish on that study were caught in the 40 foot range. Just people had to hang on to that one number and that when we talked about it a couple weeks ago. And that's funny how that works when you're looking for something to poke a hole in because there's a little bit of a bias.
Yeah.
I thought the most interesting part about that
was when you had the ROV down, you could just see people walking around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you wouldn't think that they'd be able to see you. I suppose it depends on water clarity too, but yeah. No wonder fish get spooky.
Right. I don't think that water was all that clear, really.
No, it was clearish. You know, I wouldn't say it was stained water.
Yeah.
It's probably not zebra mussel water, but it's north central Minnesota water. It's going to be fairly clear. But we were deep and there was snow and a foot of ice.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what blew my mind is that you could still see that much with how far down all that was.
And 6 inches of snow.
Right.
You know, so 30 feet of water at least. At one point, I think he's down on the bottom and nearly 50 feet of water, I think. But yeah, he pointed up with, 30, 40, 50 feet of water, foot of ice, and 6 inches of snow. And you could see people walking around like it was behind a curtain that has a light or a sun shining on it or backlit, something like a shadow.
Yeah. Shadow puppets.
Yeah, exactly. So pretty interesting stuff. We'll have that more of that coming out on a Prairie Sportsman episode coming out later this season. Another new episode coming up this Sunday night too at 7:30 p.m. on Pioneer PBS or on the Prairie Sportsman YouTube channel. Go there now and subscribe. We got to talk about some sponsors, Dan.
You bet.
Including our new official truck sponsor of Sporting Journal Radio and Fish Hunt Forever. Dan, take it away.
Yeah, we've got Inver Grove Toyota. The official truck sponsor of Fish Hunt Forever is Inver Grove Toyota. When looking for your new rig, head over to Inver Grove Toyota. The Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic is March 8th, 9th, and 10th at Canterbury Park in Shakopee. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com. Haybale Heights Campground and Resort, fish out of a snow bear on Devil's Lake. Learn more at haybaleheights.com. Onyx Hunt, landowner information, public land access, and much, much more. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. Prairie Sportsman, the new season is underway. Watch episodes anytime at the Prairie Sportsman YouTube channel. Lake of the Woods Tourism. Lake of the Woods is the walleye capital of the world. Plan a trip for this winter, spring, or summer at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. And the Midwest Wild Sheep Foundation annual banquet and fundraiser is March 15th and 16th at the Minneapolis Marriott Southwest in Minnetonka. Learn more at MidwestWildSheep.com. Thanks, sponsors. I want to take a moment and say thanks to our sponsors. We really appreciate you. And I'm not just saying that. We really do, because without them, we wouldn't have this show or this job. And I'm very thankful to have this job.
Yeah, we really are thankful for Inver Grove Toyota for coming on board as our official truck sponsor. I love this Tundra that I'm driving right now. And I'm real jealous. I tried to trade it in already, you guys. I talked about this truck last week on the show. But if you missed it, I don't even know if it might have sold by now. But if it hasn't, here's a black Tundra that was on their showroom floor when I was there, I guess it's a couple weeks ago now, so it might be gone, but, they are excited about selling these Tundras here in Minnesota. There isn't another one like that in the state of Minnesota. That's the only one like it, that one right there that we showed that may be sold by now, but go in there, give them a call, see what they got for Tundras. You won't be disappointed. I love driving that truck. I know Wade, yeah, your dad drove when I was in Chicago. He's like, I had to take it for a little test drive. And he drove it around, parked in the Cabela's parking lot and just sat in it just to see how people would react. And then he's texting me, and which was really funny about it. He didn't tell me he was going to do that. But I got a notice on my phone, like, oh, my doors are unlocked. What you doing, Wade? And then, then he texted me. He's like, this thing is, like, the word smooth came up in the conversation a number of times. And it is just, like, the suspension on it, the seats are comfortable. Everything about it is just a smooth, smooth ride. And it's got a bunch of bells and whistles. And again, my favorite, the seat coolers. Love those things. So check it out, Inver Grove Toyota. You can find them online as well, or stop in right off of 494 Robert Street in Inver Grove Heights, Minnesota. Tell them you heard about us talking right here.
Raising Cane's too.
Oh, yeah.
There's incentives. Swing by the old Toyota dealership and then go get some Raising Cane's. There's a Chick-fil-A there. That's a special thing for us who live out in the rocks and cows country of Minnesota.
Yeah, we don't get that stuff out here.
No.
If you go in there and tell them you heard about the Toyota Tundras at Inver Grove from us, they'll give you a discount. So I believe the code is going to be FHF. So go in there and give them a call and check it out. David, you had a chance to ride up to Lake of the Woods with me in that truck this week. Yeah. We were up at River Bend. It's a good time. You're welcome for that ride.
Thank you. Very smooth.
You're welcome. Very smooth. That's right. We'll have more about our trip to Lake of the Woods coming up later here on this show, next week here on this show, and on the Fish Hunt Forever YouTube channel. If you haven't subscribed to that yet, do that. And if you want to get updates from us, we have a new website, fishhuntforever.com, and everything that we do, because we do a lot of stuff. We're on Prairie Sportsman, Sporting Journal Radio. We have Fish Hunt Forever. We have Taz and Lake and Taz and TV. We do a lot of different things. And people are like, man, I can't keep them straight. You got four YouTube channels. You got this and that.
that? Well, we funneled them all through fishhuntforever.com. So if you ever want to just see what we've been up to, go to that website, check it out, and then you can subscribe with your email address. And anytime we put up new stuff, we just email it to you. And then you've got it, and you can just watch it over and over again and share it with your friends and hit smash that like button because it's the most amazing content you've ever seen, right?
No way!
Something like that. So check it out at fishhuntforever.com. It's show season. I'm going to go on down to the Pheasant Fest this year, guys.
Are you?
I am.
Is that right? No kidding.
Sioux Falls. That's going to be a good time.
Thanks for the invite.
We have to plug this OnX party. Let me pull it up here real quick. So once again, OnX.
Trampled by Turtles is going to be down there too, by the way. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll just swing down for old TBT and
swing by the show.
Swing by the show too if I get around to it. But Trampled by Turtles puts on a great show. Have you ever seen them live?
I don't
expect, David, you have. Brett, maybe you're a music guy.
Yeah, I haven't seen them live, but I used to play them all the time when I did a music show in Fargo. I used to play them on the radio all the time.
They do a great live show. I've seen them. They're fun. Like I didn't expect, I liked their music, but I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about them in person. But they put on, they rock a little bit. It was fun. We should get Dave Simonette on the show. We should take him fuzzing on
it. Absolutely. Actually, I messaged him to get him on the show and actually film a Prairie Sports about it. He was all for it. So,
all right. Well, Dave, if you listen, let's go pheasant this year.
OnX gave away some tickets to Trampled by Turtles, by the way. And then OnX also has their party. It's offline at Pheasant Fest. It'll be Friday, March 1st at 9 p.m. at Ramcota's Grand Rushmore Hall. Live music from the Damn Jammers. And the chance to win some great Upland prizes with public access pull tabs. There's going to be some free line and Kugels.
Ooh.
Can also learn about the new PATH program in South Dakota, South Dakota's new public access to habitat program that's fundamentally changing how we look at private land. So there you go. Check it out at Pheasant Fest with OnX coming up March 1st, Friday, March 1st at Ramcota's Grand Rushmore Hall at 9 p.m.
We could even swing through there. Maybe we'll bring the boat and I'll swing over to the river quick, fish, and then swing back, hit TBT, the OnX party, and get on out of
there. Let's do it. I'll be there. You should stop by.
I might have to.
Absolutely.
We'll put it on the calendar.
All right. Stephen Cook is on the way. He's going to talk barrow trauma, and Joe Henry will talk Lake of the Woods in the extended walleye season. All on the way.
Lake of the Woods, the walleye capital of the world, is calling out to you. From the northwest angle to the south shore and Rainy River, this is the Midwest's number one ice fishing destination. Walleye, sauger, perch, northern pike, and eel pout. The fishing on Lake of the Woods is like a world of its own. Experience the most amazing fishing through one of the many full-service resorts featuring heated fish houses, ice transportation, meal plans, and sleeper fish house options. For more information, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The Snow Bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit haybaleheights.com to book your trip today.
Don't miss the 2024 Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic, presented by select Heartland Chevy dealers at Canterbury Park in Shakopee, March 8th, 9th, and 10th. This year's Classic features top hunting celebrities like Pat Nicole Reeve of Driven TV, Melissa Bachman of Winchester Deadly Passion TV, and legendary bow hunter Barry Wenzel. Get your antlers scored, view more than 300 antler entries, and see the latest hunting products, plus a great lineup of lodges and outfitters. Learn more about the Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic, March 8th, 9th, and 10th at Canterbury Park in Shakopee at mndeerclassic.com.
852 million acres of public land, 147 million private properties,
all in the palm of your hand.
OnX Hunt,
the number one hunting GPS app, just got better. With hundreds of custom map layers, 3D and topographic maps, you can easily scout on the road or at home before you go. And now you can get important weather details, CWD detection, and even know what crops have been planted where. Get the most trusted hunting GPS app ever made. OnX. Know where you stand with OnX Hunt.
This is Sporting Journal Radio, presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
Well, one of our favorite things to do in the spring is go up to the Rainy River to fish, and we've got the big tournament coming up again this year, the SGR 500. It's the third annual, and it'll be the last Tuesday and Wednesday of the walleye season, so April 9th and 10th. We'll be basing out of Riverbend. You can stay wherever you want, but we'll have a party there, be giving away prizes. We'll record this show in the restaurant there, and you can come join us and be part of the show as well. Find out more at sportingjournalradio.com. And we got a lot to get to before then, including the rest of February and, of course, March, which is always a good time up at Lake of the Woods. And to find out how things are going up there, Joe Henry joins us now from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, how's it going?
Hey, Brett, you know what? I'll tell you, I wanna chat about ice fishing like you kind of led into, but I do want to mention I just picked up a couple of crankbaits with Sporting Journal Radio 500 in mind. And the other question I have is, it's the Sporting Journal Radio 500 because we're celebrating your 500th show, but now shouldn't it be like the SJR 6 something? Or
I mean, it certainly could be, but SJR 500 is easier to remember.
Okay. We'll make it easy. Then you got a lot on your plate.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I don't want to change the name of it every year.
It's like the Daytona now.
Yeah. We do 500 laps.
You don't mind if I give him a hard time once in a while, do you?
I hope you do.
I'd expect it.
Put in his place a little bit more.
See how it is?
You don't do it. Poor Danny, the only time you can say anything is when I want to call.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to surpass.
Oh, no. He says plenty when you're not here, too.
You just don't watch the show.
Yeah. Well, this week, Joe, we're actually going to be up at Lake of the Woods. This past week, we were up at Lake of the Woods at River Bend, and we're going to be bringing you more from that trip next week here on the podcast. And we have a little bit of fun.
Oh, gosh, we have fun. Yeah. Even Freddie has fun at it, Will.
What is that supposed to mean? That I don't have fun other places?
Boy, poor Briss, he's sensitive. You know what that? You can't say anything. What's that supposed to mean?
So, obviously, Lake of the Woods is known for its extended season, Joe. So there's a lot of fishing yet to do up there, isn't there?
There is a ton. And I'll tell you, Brett, every year it gets so confusing for visitors because if you turn on a Twin Cities news station or maybe you see a fishing report from another lake, an inland lake in Minnesota, they're going to talk about how the season's winding down at the end of February. And up at Lake of the Woods, in fact, it is not winding down at the end of February. Our fish houses can be on the ice as we're border water with Canada. Our fish houses, our overnight fish houses, are allowed to be on the ice through March 31st. That's one whole extra month. And then in addition, our walleye and sauger season is extended through April 14th. Our pike season never closes. So, you know, if you want to get some February and March ice fishing in, it's some of the best darn months of the year. You got longer days. Our resorts have fish houses out. They're catering to people. It's just like it's game on. It's just that it's really the only game in town. And you know, it's not overly crowded. And I'll tell you why. It's because a lot of people get confused. They don't even know there's a season up north that they can fish walleyes that late, you know, because they need to turn the news on and they get misconstrued. So anyway, if you want to get some really good ice fishing in, and I got to tell you, this year, I mean, I've heard a lot of guides and resort owners talk about how this is one of the best ice fishing years they have had in decades. I mean, they don't know if it's the best, but boy, it's been a really, really good year overall.
And, I bet some of that could be attributed to a little bit of less fishing pressure. People have been unsure with hearing conflicting things and hearing, you know, because you look at other parts of the state down south and maybe conditions aren't the greatest, but conditions have been pretty consistent up there, haven't they?
They have been very consistent. So why are there more fish? I think certainly part of it could be, you don't have as many anglers out there and they're not picking away at them as much. But I think it's more than that. You know, we saw the basin starting to fill up over the summer with nice walleyes. And we knew this fall there was a really good bite off the south shore of Lake of the Woods, as an example. The angle has been good for years. It was just more that basin. I got a hypothesis. Back in 2014, we had an 80-year rain event, and that just deluged Lake of the Woods. The Rainy River, there were logs and tree systems and everything else getting pushed into the lake. It was so much water was pushed through the lake up into Ontario. All of a sudden, our Northwest Angle guides up there were talking about how big a walleyes they were catching up on Ontario, which wasn't the norm. You normally catch those in the basin. I think that big blast of water that pushed through pushed a lot of the forage up north. And it took about a year and a half for the basin to get back to normal. Well, you know, the summer of 22, we just had record-breaking flooding on Lake of the Woods. A ton of water got pushed through that system. I kind of wonder if the same thing didn't happen and now our basin is just getting back to normal. But I got to tell you, last winter at this time, you'd see people squawking online about, you know, is Lake of the Woods getting overfished and where do these fish go and the lakes might be in trouble. And well, you know what? I want to send them the fishing reports from this year because our fishing reports as a whole have been very good. And these aren't small fish. These are nice saugers and nice keeper walleyes. So the lake is super healthy. We're catching those kind of fish all over the lake, which is promising. And we're only fishing a pittance of the lake. So I'm encouraged and I hope others are too.
I saw somebody post, last week or so, there was a kid that wanted to go up and catch some burbot. So he stayed out in one of the sleepers and had a pretty good night out there.
He did. He got a few nice, I posted some of those photos online on our Facebook page, but that's exactly what he did. He just went to a sleeper shack with his dad. And when you go to a sleeper shack on Lake of the Woods, you know, our water is stained water, which is so advantageous for people to catch walleyes and saugers during the day, because they'll actually bite during the day. Now, eel pout, they'll bite during the day. They'll also bite at night. And you might get a walleye or two at night once in a while, you know, but those eel pout, they'll bite all the time, and it's certainly like biting at night. But they feed, you know, their eyesight isn't real good. They feed more on their sense of vibration in the water and also their smell. So having a good jigging spoon down there with a good couple dead frozen shiners on there, you know, and that's usually the ticket.
All right, Joe. Well, if people want to get up there, stay in a sleeper, get into that extended season, maybe fish for pike late season or start thinking about the Rainy River, what should they do for more info?
You know what? Everything we have is on our website. That is lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit HaybaleHeights.com to book your trip today.
852 million acres of public land, 147 million private properties,
all in the palm of your hand.
OnX Hunt,
the number one hunting GPS app, just got better. With hundreds of custom map layers, 3D and topographic maps, you can easily scout on the road or at home before you go. And now you can get important weather details, CWD detection, and even know what crops have been planted where. Get the most trusted hunting GPS app ever made. OnX. Know where you stand with OnX Hunt.
Well, it's coming back again in Minnetonka. It's at the Minneapolis Marriott. It's the annual fundraiser and banquet for the Wild Sheep Foundation. This is a pretty neat time. I've gone many, many times to this banquet. It's great to go back and see some old friends. And they're really doing a lot for habitat and conservation there. There's a lot of money that gets spent on wild sheep and the habitat projects that these sheep need. And so much of that benefits other wildlife as well. And this year, they've got some cool new things taking place there, a big auction. They're also going to be giving away a couple of statewide youth turkey tags as well. So check it out. The 2024 Midwest Chapter of the Wild Sheep Banquet and Foundation, the Wild Sheep Foundation Banquet and Fundraiser, March 15th and 16th at the Minneapolis Marriott Southwest in Minnetonka.
Lake of the Woods, the walleye capital of the world, is calling out to you. From the northwest angle to the south shore and Rainy River, this is the Midwest's number one ice fishing destination. Walleye, sauger, perch, northern pike, and eel pout. The fishing on Lake of the Woods is like a world of its own. Experience the most amazing fishing through one of the many full-service resorts featuring heated fish houses, ice transportation, meal plans, and sleeper fish house options. For more information, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitouish Waters.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, look for a few flurries, otherwise mostly cloudy skies and quite breezy. Gusts up to 25 out of the west. For tonight, breezy with a low near 18 with mostly cloudy skies. Cloudy skies give way to some sunshine on your Saturday afternoon with a high near 31. Currently 2 below zero.
This is Sporting Journal Radio, presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
Barotrauma has become a big topic in recent months here in the fishing world, I think in general, and it's been a big topic for a long time for a number of biologists and anglers. A lot of guys that are fishing deep water or fishing in the ocean, they've known about barotrauma for a long time, but it's really starting to hit home in our neck of the woods when it comes to species such as crappies and walleyes. And the anglers that go out there and target them in deep fish. And when catch and release has gotten to be so popular, there needs to be a little bit more information out there about is catch and release actually benefiting some of these fish that are caught in deeper water? And we're finding out that maybe it's not. So we're trying to learn more and more about it. We're reaching out to more and more people about it in different parts of the world. And Scott Mockentoon said, you got to have this guy on the show. So Stephen Cook, he's a professor of fisheries science at Carleton University in Ottawa, joins us right now on the show. Stephen, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for being here. Have you been following what's been happening over here and the talk about barrel trauma a lot?
Absolutely. It's impossible not to. Social media is blowing up, and never thought barrow trauma would be as popular as, you know, things like Taylor Swift, but such is life.
I'm not quite sure we're at Swifty levels quite yet, but, you know, maybe after this interview right now.
Yeah.
You know, some people are still learning about barrow trauma. You know, I never really fished deep. Growing up, most of the water that I fished in really wasn't that deep, so I never really had to deal with it too much until I started fishing for lake trout, and I started learning a little bit more about barrow trauma, and lake trout are built a little bit differently than crappies and walleyes, so it's not quite the same discussion, but in Minnesota particularly, there's been a lot of popularity in fishing crappies in deep basins, and obviously catch and release has gotten popular, so more and more people are learning about barrow trauma. And there's different opinions about it. Some guys say, well, if I do this, they'll be okay. Well, if I do this, they'll be okay. And some people don't know what barrow trauma is at all. So any discussion about it, I think right now, is good. But we need to get the right discussion, the right answers out there. And obviously, there's a lot of research that's been ongoing. We're still learning some things. But we've known some things about barrow trauma for a long time, particularly probably guys like you that have been studying it for a while. You've known about barrow trauma for quite a while, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. And it certainly was the marine world where it sort of first came to the fore. Folks that were fishing off party boats in Florida, for example, catching snapper and grouper from really quite deep water, bringing them to the surface, putting them overboard, and birds were essentially whacking those animals before they had a chance to get back to depth. Now, in those cases, we were, you know, oftentimes talking about 100, 150 feet of water, so not surprising. And maybe we should first mention and remind to folks what barrow trauma is. And essentially, when fish are at depth, there is pressure, and the fish essentially become used to that pressure. And when they are brought to the surface quite rapidly, that pressure dissipates. And so a number of things happen to the animal. Most notably is any gases on board expand because that pressure has been released. All of a sudden, the pressure is gone. And so things like the swim bladder expand greatly. That can lead to stomach aversion where the stomach is pushed out. We see Popeye where the eyes can stick out a little bit. But there's a whole bunch of other things that happen to the animal that you can't see. For example, the formation of large bubbles in the blood and the damage that happens to the internal organs when things like the swim bladder extend and expand to the extent that they do. And so the general wisdom with barrow trauma is A, avoid it. And if you can't avoid it, then B, do what you can to get those animals back in the water really quickly and back to depth. And that's where there's various strategies and creative approaches that people have looked at.
Yeah, and some of those things might be, say, descending devices, or I hear people talk about fizzing a lot. I can't imagine, and I haven't looked into a lot of studies. I haven't heard anything where it's actually benefited the fish other than getting it back down to depth. Is there any long-term research that's been done on some fish when it comes to fizzing or venting, I guess, as far as survivability of barrow trauma?
Yeah, most of what we know is pretty short-term, in the order of hours to a couple days. We certainly know that leaving a fish that is struggling on the surface in open water will be taken out by predators. You know, birds will get them pretty quickly. So getting them back to depth is certainly, you know, giving them a fighting chance. But it's also getting them back to the appropriate depth. So we have a study that we're just wrapping up right now with smallmouth bass, where we fizzed them and then released them over 30 feet of water, which is a very reasonable depth to fish for smallmouth, right? You know, you can imagine a point with smallies stacked up over it, sitting in 30 feet of water, even on the bottom. That's good smallmouth habitat. And then we released some over 100 plus feet of water. And the reason we did that is there's a movement away from using live release boats. So people are literally, the tournament organizers, after your fish are weighed, give you your fish back, you head out to the middle of the lake and release your fish where there's a lot of good water. And if those fish have been fizzed, the assumption is that they'll be able to figure out where to be in the water column. But our work suggests they go right to the bottom. So they've essentially lost all capability to regulate buoyancy. And I don't know about you, but I've never caught a smallmouth bass at 100 or 150 foot depth. And those animals are not in good shape. So we've sent down ROVs to look at these fish, and they're just sitting on the bottom. We can't hover an ROV above them for a long period of time, but in my professional judgment, those animals were toast. So fizzing can work. It does seem to get them back to depth. And days later, they do seem to be able to start to regulate buoyancy again, but not right off the bat. So if you're going to do it, make sure you educate yourself. You look at the training materials, certainly for bass, black bass and walleye. There's lots of videos out there by scientists and organizations that do a lot of fizzing. You can ask somebody, you know, at a tournament where there's professionals that fizz, instead of just trying it yourself and turning the fish into a pin cushion, getting somebody to demonstrate and show you how it works. Then it's effective. Then I'm comfortable with it, but it's something that does take some proper technique and training.
So based on that, you would say maybe don't release them in 100 feet of water as well, too. If you're going to do that, go to, you know, maybe a 30 foot or less, something that's a little bit more reasonable for where these fish would live normally.
Exactly. And, you know, the idea of trying to prevent barotrauma in the first place, that's a tough one. You can be fishing top water and have a fish bust up from the bottom, 30 feet of water, a smallmouth will come clear up, grab a top water, and in its mind, it's going to go right back down. So it's at those surface pressures for a matter of milliseconds. It wants to go back down, but of course, we keep it at the surface if that fish gets hooked on our top water. So there are instances, even if you fish in shallow water, there's potential to experience fish and counter fish that have barotrauma. So the idea of don't fish in deep water isn't entirely helpful, given that fish are mobile and they move in that third dimension very easily.
Well, we'll just eat those bass then.
Sounds good. I love it.
I mean, really, that's, you know, I think that's kind of been a big message for us. If you are going to fish deep, try to harvest those fish. I mean, not bass, obviously, isn't generally thought of as a harvest fish necessarily. I just want to go back to this for a second because this is kind of fascinating to me when it comes to like fizzing. So you've seen that some fish can actually heal and recover after being fizzed like that.
Yep, and there's some work on walleye that suggests the same. So most of the work we've done related to fizzing has been on smallmouth bass, but there's work done on walleye as well that suggests that after, I can't give the exact time point, you know, it's 12 hours, 2 days, whatever it is, but somewhere in that few day range, those animals are able to heal.
So I do just feel obligated to point out, because most of our audience is in Minnesota, that regardless of the effectiveness of it, it's not legal to do in Minnesota. So just to all our Minnesota listeners, I want to throw that out there that whether it works or not, it's not a legal method of release in our state for now. Anyways, I guess we could see that it's legal. Maybe that's something if we see that it's effective, maybe it's something we push for.
I guess Stephen Cook, professor of fisheries science at Carleton University in Ottawa. More with Stephen when we come back.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit haybaleheights.com to book your trip today.
Don't miss the 2024 Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic, presented by select Heartland Chevy dealers at Canterbury Park in Shakopee, March 8th, 9th, and 10th. This year's Classic features top hunting celebrities like Pat Nicole Reeve of Driven TV, Melissa Bachman of Winchester Deadly Passion TV, and legendary bow hunter Barry Wenzel. Get your antlers scored, view more than 300 antler entries, and see the latest hunting products, plus a great lineup of lodges and outfitters. Learn more about the Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic March 8th, 9th, and 10th at Canterbury Park in Shakopee at mndeerclassic.com.
Come ice fish the famous waters of Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the walleye capital of the world. Experience full-service resorts featuring heated fish houses, ice transportation, meal plans, and sleeper house options. From the northwest angle to the south shore, Rainy River and Baudette, the Midwest's number one ice fishing destination. Walleye, sauger, perch, and northern pike, Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, best fishing anywhere. For more information, log on to lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
852 million acres of public land, 147 million private properties,
all in the palm of your hand.
OnX Hunt,
the number one hunting GPS app, just got better. With hundreds of custom map layers, 3D and topographic maps, you can easily scout on the road or at home before you go. And now you can get important weather details, CWD detection, and even know what crops have been planted where. Get the most trusted hunting GPS app ever made. OnX. Know where you stand with OnX Hunt.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Get it done right the first time with CNR Power Sports. Come see Carl on Ash Street in Park Falls when your boat, ATV, UTV, snowmobile, or even lawnmowers, snowblowers, chainsaws, and all other small engines won't start or run right. From light tune-up to full teardown and engine rebuild, Carl will bring his 30-plus years of experience to every job you bring him. CNR Power Sports is also the area's only factory-authorized warranty service center for Generac and DR brand equipment. Bring all makes and models. Look up CNR Power Sports on Google or give Carl a call at 608-228-7223. Find Carl where Ash Street meets the Tuscobia Trail. CNR Power Sports, your trusty pit stop for top-notch care.
We've got Pete with us from Wheelway in Fifield. Pete, we've got some special incentives for folks if they want to get a little work done on their car. You guys got a little incentive for them to do that, right?
Hey, you know what? The holidays are over, but we're still giving discounts down at Wheelway. There's many discounts off brakes, tires, alignments, whatever the issue with your car. You want to make sure it's roadworthy and you can trust it during this winter time.
All right. And if their service, if their work's over $100, you got a little extra discount for them too, right?
Yeah, you know what? 15% goes a long ways.
Yeah, it goes a long ways, whether it's an oil change, alignment, or from all the slipping and sliding they did from the recent snow we had. Maybe they need some new tires. You guys go set them up for you, right?
You finally find out right now. You didn't find out a couple months ago, but yes, there's many discounts off tires right now. Don't hesitate.
Find out real quick. They can always call down the Wheelway in Fifield. How can they reach you guys down there, Pete?
Hey, give us a call. They're ready for your call at 715-762-2467. The number again is 715-762-2467.
They'll take care of you. Wheelway, Fifield, Wisconsin, just a couple miles south of Park Falls, right on Highway 13.
Hi, this is Scott Trout of Cordell & Cordell. There are a lot of great dads out there. Sometimes those dads get divorced. For more than 30 years, we have represented men in divorce, confronting the pitfalls that could devastate your finances or harm your family relationships. While every situation is different, our goal is to get the best outcome for you and your kids. Visit CordellCordell.com to take the first step.
Schedule an appointment with one of Cordell & Cordell's Madison area attorneys. 1110 Fourier Drive, Suite 120, Madison, Wisconsin, 53717.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, look for a few flurries, otherwise mostly cloudy skies and quite breezy. Gusts up to 25 out of the west. For tonight, breezy with a low near 18 with mostly cloudy skies. Cloudy skies give way to some sunshine on your Saturday afternoon with a high near 31. Currently 2 below zero.
Presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
All right, we are back on Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for watching or listening wherever you are right now. Stephen Cook is our guest. He's a professor of fisheries science at Carleton University in Ottawa.
So one of the issues that people have brought up with some of the studies that have been done here in Minnesota is the methodology being used. So when you are out there, say, let's talk about this fizzing study, and you're observing fish on the bottom, you're seeing them a couple of days later recovering. How are you doing that? I know you mentioned the underwater ROV. How do you know it's the same fish?
Yeah. So first off, barotrauma is probably the biggest challenge within the catch and release space. And in terms of barotrauma under ice, you sort of double down and make it extra challenging. So there's two ways in general we do catch release studies. One is we catch a whole pile of fish and then we hold on to them for a few days. That can be done by bringing them into tanks, putting them in pens, holding them in a vertical net, which is what the Minnesota DNR did in that first video, at least. But as you can imagine, that's not entirely realistic. We've brought them into captivity. They're stressed with that. There's abrasion in the net. They're with a pile of other animals without food necessarily and the usual cover or structure that they have. So there's an inherent stress built in. And then what we usually do is look at how they do, you know, how many are injured, do they survive, if they die, when do they die, and is there a way to figure out what was the cause of that death? For example, did all the fish that died, did they come from a certain depth or below a certain depth? Were they hooked in a certain place, like the esophagus? Those kinds of, you know, were they air exposed for a particularly long period of time? But what we need in science and what we try and use are controls. So the idea that you have a group of animals that do not have barotrauma and ideally that weren't caught by rod and reel. And that's the real challenge with catch and release, getting controls. We can catch animals in other ways, for example, electrofishing, not in the winter, but in the open water periods. But electrofishing, can it in and of itself also be harmful to fish in certain contexts? So we have to sort of catch fish to be able to assess how well they're doing. But at the same time, we know whatever gear, whatever method we use will cause some level of injury, will cause some level of stress, and that will potentially affect their behavior and even their survival. So when we release fish, and that's the alternative way, is we release fish back into the wild and we track them. The challenge, of course, is to track them, we usually have to tag them in some way. And so the example that I gave where we were looking at fish that were released in really deep water versus a smallmouth released in really deep water versus 30 feet that had been fizzed, hadn't been fizzed, that kind of thing. What we did was we put a Velcro strap around the body with functionally a Fitbit on it. So it measured water temperature, depth, and acceleration, just like your watch or your phone would or your Fitbit. And so we can tell how active the fish is. That Velcro strap is attached to fishing line and we let it free spool and that fish does its own thing. And after a period of time, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever we decide, we basically reel in the slack, give it a tug, that opens up the Velcro strap, we reel in the Fitbit and record, and then we can download the data. That's one way to do it. Obviously, most fish don't swim around with a Velcro strap. Are we affecting its behavior in some way? Undoubtedly. We can also put electronic tags in fish, but then we have to do surgery, which means then we have to put them to sleep. And then if you're releasing a fish, what you're tracking is a fish that's either high or frankly hungover because it's impaired from the anesthetic. So that's not a great method. So people are trying to do other things. You saw in the one, I think it was the uncut angling video where they were using a forward-facing sonar to track at least the animal just getting down to the bottom. We've used ROVs to validate some of what we've seen. So put eyes on the fish so we don't have to just trust our electronic tags. But within fishery science, there's so many challenges and biases and limitations. And that's something that if one isn't a scientist and reads the papers or watches a video, one might say, whoa, what about this or what about that? But the part of a paper that every scientist goes to first is the limitation section. Because the people that do the science, the scientists themselves, know more about the limitations than any reader ever will. So we do a pretty good job talking about the limitations and what those limitations mean in terms of how those data should be extrapolated and the extent to which they should or shouldn't be used in other contexts. So the initial Minnesota DNR study, clearly the context there was for fish that had been held at the surface for a period of time. It wasn't a rapid release scenario. So in many ways, I think they documented worst case scenario for the depths that they studied. And so an obvious question is, well, what if you eliminate air exposure or get the fish back in the water in 10 seconds? So that's sort of how science works. It's this stepwise process where technology advances, creates new opportunities, where we identify what those limitations are with previous studies, and we redo them, and we keep doing that. And as we do that, the burden of evidence accumulates. The stack of papers that collectively say, you know, A is good and B is bad, and then eventually that's the kind of evidence that managers will look at when trying to make decisions. It's rarely one study or one paper. I wish I could be that effective with the work we do. You know, I write papers like crazy, and I can point to a handful of examples of where there have been any regulatory changes in any meaningful timescales. So it's really about education. That's why when we do our work, we try to share it through forums like this, through social media, getting our faces in front of fishing clubs and sharing what we've learned, because education is way easier, it's less expensive, and oftentimes more effective than regulation.
When it comes to barotrauma, a lot of discussion has been out there about reeling up slowly. And when it comes to, I can never remember which one is which, the psychostomus, psychoclistus?
Physoclistus and physostomus. Is with an O, so open. So that's how I think of that. Physostomus is one that has that opening between. And then physoclistus, CL, I use in my head to think of closed. So so in case people don't know what we're talking about, a lake trout has a direct, functionally a pneumatic duct between the swim bladder and its esophagus or mouth. So it's able to basically burp and get out that air. So instead of having that same level of swim bladder expansion. For fish, perchids, centrarchids, so your yellow perch, your black crappie, things like that, walleye, they are physoclistus, meaning that there is no direct connection, and they have to use physiology to move those blood gases out, or move those gases out of the swim bladder into the blood, and then essentially off gas that way. So it's a much longer process. So bringing up a physoclistus fish more slowly probably doesn't do a whole lot, but a physostomus fish, like a lake trout, it gives them time to burp, expel those gases from function. It looks like burping. It's not really burping because it's not their stomach, but get rid of those gases out of their swim bladder.
It also sounds like burping. It does. First time I saw that, I laughed pretty hard, actually, because I'm 12. But that's interesting. You know, we fish for a lot of lake trout, and occasionally we're fishing deep. And so we've tried to make it we've been a proponent of reeling up slowly and watching for air bubbles as the fish comes up. You know, we hit certain levels and we usually stop and try to let it expel some gases if we can. And then I've heard from numerous people that say they try to do that with crappies and walleyes, but it doesn't, that's not going to help those fish, right?
That's the time frame at which that those physiological processes play out. It's much longer. So not super helpful, other than, you know, there may be less internal trauma, giving time for that swim bladder that pressure to be released and the swim bladder to grow more slowly, instead of if you horse it to the surface, all of a sudden it goes from being, you know, a swim bladder looks like a condom, basically. And when they're at depth, that it looks like an entirely empty condom. And when it comes to the surface, it's like you've tied the end off and it's a very inflated balloon. And you can imagine it fills very quickly when the animal is brought to the surface quite quickly. So there might be somewhat less trauma to the innards to bring things up slowly, but there's no scientific evidence of that. That's just me musing. Yeah. So there's no science that I'm aware of that suggests that bringing a physoclistus fish, such as a crappie or a walleye, up more slowly is less.
How slow are you going to go to think it actually might make a difference?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think I'd be more likely to, you know, you have to trade that off with, getting it to the surface as quickly as possible, seeing whether it's a fish you intend to harvest or not, and if not, getting it back down as quickly as possible. So the swim bladder inflation is but one of many things that's happening to that fish, and much of it you can't see unless you have a scanning electron microscope with you in the field, and they only cost a couple $100,000, so probably not something you're going to bring on the ice.
All right, for our radio listeners, we got to let you go here, but we're going to continue this conversation. Very interesting stuff. More with Stephen Cook. Go to the Sporting Journal Radio.